Let's go, Chad.
And we get set for the start of round number three. So far, Evander Holyfield has followed the blueprint.
And you can see the difference in the corners, Bob. In the corner of Holyfield, it's all action and talk. They got a game plan. They're energetic in getting their guy going. In the other corner, they seem to be very quiet and seem to be very happy with the performance of Douglas thus far, just telling him to throw combinations. Well, he hasn't landed single punch yet. You better start thinking to get the jab going.
That time by holding Holyfield. Right hand stuns Douglas.
Caught him going in. He is not going to get up. There goes the heavyweight championship of the world.
Mills Lane with the count.
Holyfield. Heavyweight championship of the world.
Evander Holyfield with a third round knockout puts away Buster Douglas.
And Buster Douglas is still down. A perfect combination just as he was getting aggressive. And what does this indicate, ladies and gentlemen? What was that in Tokyo? Was that just chance that he brought?
Or was it a mirage?
Or was it a mirage?
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Now, a few months ago, we did a podcast. We don't usually do this. We don't usually focus on one club, because we don't know what goes on in clubs, do we? But we did do one focused on a club back in May, because they won the title. That club was Leicester City.
Mm.
8 months later, we're now focusing a new podcast on them, because they're in a very different situation now. For a start, how was your weekend?
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, I saw Sunderland in another four-goal thriller.
Yeah.
Except at the other end this time. Against Southampton. And two goals were scored by...
You'd gone home, didn't you?
Gabbiadini.
Yeah, two goals by Gabbiadini, yeah.
It's like that guy's just haunting.
He is. M. Gabbiadini turned up twice on there.
Well, I mean, we were in the pub all on Saturday, so...
We
went fine.
Well, yeah.
We got quite drunk watching German football.
Well, we watched a feast of football, didn't we?
We did. We watched the Arsenal Hull game.
Yeah.
Yeah, a game of two hands.
Yeah.
And then we went to the Zeitgeist and watched Conference.
Yeah.
We watched all the German football, but not all of it, but all that was on at the time. So we saw some cracking games there. And then we went back to the old tavern and mostly watched the Liverpool game.
Yes.
Our Liverpool watching experience was interrupted by rugby fans.
Yeah.
Unhappy that there wasn't rugby.
On all of the televisions.
All of the televisions. They wanted the rugby on all of the televisions. We couldn't even spare one lousy television so that we could watch the football.
That's not freaking good.
That's just what rugby fans are like, though.
Oh, stop it.
Well, it's fair to say...
cracking game, actually.
It's what those rugby fans were like, anyway.
Yeah.
But they'd been in there all day, I think, and were quite lagered up.
But, hey, it wasn't too bad, because we got the Wi-Fi code off the guy there.
We did,
and he was quite happy enough for us to watch the game.
Because he was a Liverpool fan, you wanted to know what was going on.
So, I put it up on my phone and we watched the game.
Did you all crowd around your phone?
Yeah, everyone was craning their neck to have a look.
Exactly. Meanwhile, you got these rugger fans cross-armed going, nope, nope.
But it was actually the good thing was the way it actually came out, but both goals actually came during the half-time in the rugby.
Right.
So we did actually see both goals.
Yes.
Goals going.
That is
in
a good point. Yeah, it was a good
the meat of that half.
So a great result for Liverpool,
yeah. Yeah, Liverpool were all over Tottenham, weren't they?
In stark contrast to recent weeks where they've been pretty unwatchable.
And Tottenham had been almost unbeatable, right? Yeah.
But it was a predictable result, though, wasn't it? Because Liverpool tend to raise themselves against the big teams. And it's been suggested that Tottenham aren't so good against the top teams.
Hmm.
I don't know whether or not the stats bear that out.
They do indeed. Away from home, it is pretty much the same old for Tottenham. I think under Pochettino, I think they've got one away win from 16 visits to
rivals,
their rivals.
So to speak. Yeah.
So it's pretty much the same problem that Arsenal have. Going away to their rivals, they just don't seem to get any change.
This is the difference between the best and the nearly best, isn't it?
Yeah.
or unless you're maybe like someone, a team like Liverpool that raises themselves against the big teams, but then doesn't do it for the lesser teams, shall we say, the big table, the teams, the lower teams, or the Championship teams.
Indeed, I mean that's the sort of narrative that becomes very, very easy because the stats seem to bear it out.
Yeah,
well,
if it's true, then it's results, isn't it? Really. Mm. Yeah.
So a disappointing weekend for you for Sunderland.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and an odd weekend in Germany as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, well, Dortmund lost 2-1 to Darmstadt.
Everyone lost apart from Bayern.
Yeah, everyone in the top seven lost apart from Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Typically. Yeah. And even then, they had to win it in the 90th minute. 90th and 92nd minute, they won it against Ingolstadt, who they really went on
90th
on
and 92nd?
Yes, it took that long for them to finally break them down, but, which is gutting for Ingolstadt because they play well.
Yeah, but of course now you'd see that Bayern are just drifting away at the top. A little bit like Chelsea are now after Tottenham losing. It's now they've got a comfortable 10 points, despite the fact that they only drew at the weekend.
Yeah.
And Bayern, I think it's what, 7 now, is it? 7
I think
points
it's
clear
something
at the top?
Like that. Yeah,
which is enough for them, isn't it, really?
Yeah, in Bundesliga term, it may as well be 10. Yeah. That is like a 10 or 12 point lead.
That's German for yawning gap, isn't it?
It is.
And also, as well, before we start with the main discussion of the day, we have to say thank you to everyone who contributed on through the social media with our discussion last week about aggression in football.
Yes.
Yeah, and you were aggressive with your opinions. Actually, you weren't too bad.
Very polite.
Yeah, very, very, very polite. And sometimes, of course, we don't know whether you're being tongue-in-cheek or not, but we choose to take you at face value.
Yes.
And so thanks to Tim Reader, Andy Rockall, Nick Gibb, all of you for getting in touch. And if you want to have your own say, then get in touch through any of the channels we got. Which one do you prefer them to go through, Jan?
Well, I think the Facebook is better for conversation back and forth. But my favourite is the Instagram.
You love the gram, don't you?
I do love the gram.
Yeah, even though I told you that you can't put
I've stopped doing
filters
that
on my artwork
I've,
anymore.
I've been taking... Not been doing any filters anymore.
Good.
I was suitably chastised.
I am totally hashtag no filters.
He was mortified when I told him on the train. I went, oh, no, I just put a little tweet. And he went, filters? Filters?
Brilliant.
Okay, I'll stop doing that.
Sorry, I missed that.
It was on the train as well.
It was.
Public transport.
I told him in a safe place.
Talking of safe places, the King Power Stadium hasn't really become a safe place for Ranieri now, has it, really?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, they've only recorded their wins this season at home.
Yeah.
They haven't won anything at all. They've got 5 wins at home and that's it.
They haven't scored a league goal in 2017.
It is only 3 or 4 games into maybe a little bit more.
They've gone 10 hours of playing time without a goal. And you don't have to go too far for opinion pieces online of where it's all gone wrong for Leicester this season.
No.
Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be too many answers about where it has gone wrong. Mm. There are obvious places that most of them start off with. Mm. Just as an observation from you both, I'm just going to start off and think, are we surprised that this has happened? Is this a shock that they're in this position? Where do you think they should be at this stage of the season, considering how different this season was always going to be compared to last?
I think it is a surprise, yes. And I would expect them to have been at least in the top half. I didn't think they were going to do it again.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm sure that's what we kind of ended up saying when we discussed them last. But yeah, I think to be flirting with relegation, in fact, not even flirting, I mean, they're getting into bed with relegation quite heavily, aren't they? That is a surprise, and I wasn't expecting that at all.
I don't think it's a massive surprise, but it is a surprise. I too was expecting sort of mid-table. Mm. They'd signed some players in the summertime, although they hadn't signed necessarily really big headline sort of like players.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the kind of players you'd expect English champions to sign, but they are not your normal English champions. So.
No, and they'd won the title with players that you wouldn't have expected people to sign to win the title.
Mm. And they had a recruitment with a guy called Steve Walsh. He left in the summertime, but if I'm understanding the timeline correctly, the players that were brought in were from that guy, and he was the guy who brought in the good player Mahrez and Kante into that Leicester side. And so I thought that what was likely was that they should have a fairly decent season, but then what would happen once that Steve Walsh influence left them? You know, where would that go? That dynasty that, in fairness, for all of his faults, Nigel Pearson left the club. what would happen if that started to erode and wasn't sort of like, you know, firmed up again. And it just seems to have happened much quicker than I think most people had anticipated. But it always is going to be a danger, I think, for a club of Leicester's size to have done so well with that squad of players that if they weren't able to keep it going the following season, then they could end up declining fairly spectacularly. To the extent where they were relegated, that is in fairness, a surprise. But yeah, not too much of a surprise.
Would it be fair to say that the whole of Leicester's success was built on a very fragile base, that they rode their luck to a certain extent? I wouldn't want to say that they were lucky to win the title, because they weren't. They won it with fantastic performances and consistent performances. It was their consistency that won it out for them. It wasn't just the fact that all the good teams were rubbish last season.
Mm.
Chelsea were. Man United were flaky. Mm. And City had their problems as well. That's not the reason why Leicester won, though, is it? Leicester won because they were dogged. They were very, very hard to beat. And they just scored bucket loads of goals. They were constantly scored. And that's what really is surprising now, when you see that they're not scoring goals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've still got their attacking option up front, although Ajoa doesn't want to play for them anymore.
Mm.
But, you know, he wasn't first choice anyway. And that's why he's...
why he doesn't want to play for them.
But you've got... is it just the fact that stars did align for them and that everything that could go right for them did go right? That the fact that a lot of teams can do all the right things and not get anything to show for it. Is that what we're looking at with Leicester? Are they actually a good team where things just aren't happening for them? Or is this a team that just is an ordinary mid-table Premier League side that lives on the edge of going down anyway?
I think that you're going to ride your luck a little bit, but that's not enough just to propel you to the top of the league and for you to win it. I mean, they were playing brilliant football and they had a really great plan. They played without the ball and they broke very, very quickly down the wings. Albrighton and Mahrez were terrorising the flanks all of last season.
Mm.
And that's not really happening so much. I think that if you look at their team now, with the exception of, say, Kante, obviously, who moved on, they haven't really changed it. Their back four's the same back four they started with the season before. And those guys have all moved into their 30s. And I know that, as we talked about a few weeks ago, that's not necessarily the end. But, I mean, they looked it. When I watched them against Swansea yesterday, they looked tired. They looked like they were sick of it. And where they were very successful last season, where their fullbacks were stopping the crosses from coming in.
That's not happening.
Simpson and Fuchs were just weren't really doing it, especially Simpson yesterday. And I think that's quite telling, because they were so solid at the back as well. And they were able to get the ball from when they were being attacked down the flanks and then get it up and get moving very, very quickly. What I noticed in the last few games is when they've got the ball, when they've managed to get the ball in defence, there's no movement out to the wings you saw before. Other teams have probably cottoned on to that as well. But the gap you can see between when the defenders have got the ball and when the attacking players, where they're positioned, it's like a third of the pitch difference. So there's no short passing options for them to kind of zigzag through and get up the pitch. So all you can do is just lump it forward, and that's what they've been doing.
Do you think that gap is highlighted now because they don't have the energy of Kante there? I know you mentioned it there, in there he went to Chelsea and he's doing great things there. Is it just one player? Is it just one? Take one player out of a team, and then all of a sudden everything else unravels.
I think out of that team, yes.
Yeah.
I think that he was able to make things happen, but at the same time allow players the freedom to do what they needed to do. And not worry about leaving gaps at the back, because he was just pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
And he did it at such a level, an astonishing level. Mm. And he's replicating it in Chelsea, and so it just goes to show that it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a fluke.
Yeah,
it,
well, exactly. I mean, he's doing it at Chelsea, and he's making David Luiz look like a decent defender.
Yes.
Much like he made Robert Huth and Wes Morgan look like decent defenders last season.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, those two guys did have good seasons. There's no getting around it.
Yeah.
And it is contrary to sort of popular thinking that a single player can make such a profound difference in a team sport.
Yeah.
But it does appear, in part, to be the case. There are other problems with the way Leicester play, but I'm certain that they would be further up the table if Kante was still there. Mm. Maybe not. Maybe he would be suffering from the same malaise.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of easy to be motivated and full tilt and at it when you're top of the league.
Yeah.
And he has been now for the last two seasons. It might be a different story, but I think that's an almost incalculable miss.
Mm. You're right, against Swansea, they looked poor. I mean, also, there wasn't that much between those two teams. Swansea scored with, I think, their first two shots on target.
Mm.
That's the sort of thing that really gets you thinking, well, if you think that luck plays a part in this thing, then all of a sudden you could easily get demoralised by something like that.
Mm.
Last season, and in that little period at the end of the season before, when they survived relegation...
Yeah.
They went through a couple of, well, I think there was at least two matches where they were 2-0 down and came back to either draw or win. And you sort of think, well, you go 2-0 down in the first half now and you're not seeing anything like that.
Mm.
You're not seeing anything that tells you that this is what this team is all about.
Yeah. I mean, they are a mess.
Yeah.
They are an absolute mess. They're a completely different side.
Yeah.
In many respects, same players. And you would have to assume that there's a degree of fatigue from after having achieved this Herculean effort from the last season.
Mm.
And what's not happened is they've lost their best player, and the players that they brought in haven't given them the support that those guys do need.
Mm.
And this is always the importance, I think, when you win a title is that you have to keep building.
Yeah.
Because your existing players, you know, they'll want to be hungry, but how many of those guys would have gone into the season thinking, right, we're going to defend our title?
Hmm.
If you play for Bayern Munich or Manchester United,
yes,
you know, one of the big teams, Chelsea, you go into the next season having won a title, say, right, we're going to do it again.
Hmm.
And you're hungry, you're ambitious, and moreover, you believe, you totally believe you can do it, because you play for one of these big teams, you've got a big squad, you're competing for places, managers bringing in new signings, and you're completely at it. Those guys, despite themselves, their best effort, would probably have thought, right, I don't think we're going to do this again. This was amazing, and this is great, but I'm just going to, you know, maybe, and they just step back a bit. They take the foot off the gas to a degree, and the next thing you know, they're in trouble because the new signings haven't given them the support that they need, and the next thing you know, they're in big trouble, and now they must be panicking, and looking to the future. And imagining their future being away from Leicester, and that's a pretty nasty and potentially toxic dressing room you got there.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know, but I mean, it can't be a pleasant environment in there right now.
It can't be. I mean,
well, you two support teams that are in the mix down there, so you've got to be looking at teams above you that you think are looking vulnerable, and obviously, like, you've got teams around you like Hull and Swansea who have made good managerial appointments.
Yeah, they have chosen wisely.
They have chosen wisely.
Certainly have,
and they're pushing on. So you've got to think, well, who else are the teams above you that are vulnerable? And sometimes, well...
Watford, like, Borough and Leicester.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but...
be the ones that I'd look at.
Watford have turned it around. They're top half now, aren't they?
Turned it around. So, that's true,
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I'd agreed with you. Then they went and beat Arsenal.
That's true, yeah.
But you've got Borough, who can't seem to buy a win anywhere at the moment. And you've got Leicester. I mean, in a very much in a similar situation, right? Even worse than Borough.
I mean, those teams' potential saving graces is that Sunderland and Palace are so bad that they might not have enough to drag themselves out in the first place, to actually claw their way out. They'll just keep losing, and just go down anyway. So it'll be more like Leicester and Borough, certainly Leicester staying up by default.
Yeah.
By virtue of the fact that there are three teams worse than them. But
I don't know. I think there are some similarities, I think, between Leicester and Palace at the moment. Because when you look at, just on paper, if you look at them, you look at the names, the attacking options that Leicester have got, and the attacking options that Palace have got, and you still think, well, this is a team that should be scoring more goals.
Yeah,
they should be just going out there and outscoring the position rather than worrying too much about keeping clean sheets.
But there's a shocking lack of balance in the side. Yeah. We were talking about this, Joe, and we watched a game down the pub last year, early in the season. I think when Chris was over, and Palace were playing four, two wingers, and then, you know, then a collection of forward players. Mm. There didn't appear to be any intention to do anything about the middle of the park whatsoever. Mm. They seemed to be thinking, we're going to put the ball forward to the wingers, who I think in that game were Townsend and Zaha, and then this mismatch of Kabay and Puncheon and Benteke and a few others were going to just score goals with the ball.
Yeah.
And it was just a bizarre... It was a very odd way of playing football, and I'm not very surprised to learn that it didn't really work. It didn't seem to be very structured.
Mm-hmm.
But it also seemed to be intentional. So so it was really weird, quite fluid, a bit out there, but perhaps a bit too out there. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for Sunderland, but obviously in Defoe, they've got one of the best strikers, you know, around.
But
they are so over reliant on him.
But, yeah, exactly. And if he gets injured, I mean, he probably isn't going to because he's so super fit. But Sunderland are going to go down. They're gone. They really are.
You wouldn't be surprised if they went now.
Yeah, we don't make predictions.
We don't make predictions.
Oh, that wasn't a prediction.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no,
statement.
It was a statement.
He's been in his time machine and he's gone forward in time and he's seen it.
We can't keep flirting with it like we have been doing for years. And I actually thought we were going to do well this season. I really did.
In fairness, you had every reason to think that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, England happened and then... You know, Moyes has been struggling since then because he hasn't had that full pre-season. And also, it doesn't look like he's getting the support from the owner have thought he would because the owner wants to sell the club.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought for a long time that he was going to wanted to sell the club and he's put it up for sale for hundreds of millions of pounds when he bought it for about 30.
Mm.
This is the thing, isn't it? I mean, like, this is where football club owners become compulsive gamblers and they end up chasing their losses. You know, I mean, when they really ought to be cutting them. I mean, he's not going to get that much money for that club, even if they stay up.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be better off just
trying. Not even Red Bull will pay for that.
Not even Red Bull would.
Not even Red Bull. Yeah.
Or more worryingly, maybe they would, but they'd have to wait for Sunderland to be in League One by the time it happens.
From Black Cats to Red Bulls. Mm,
Red Cats.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that Ellis Short gives a monkey's if... it's difficult to answer because you don't know him. But how do you think he would respond if Sunderland were relegated? Do you think it would actually work out better for him? Because he probably would then just go for a quick sale.
I don't think that he wants to... He would want to see the club go down, even if it facilitated a quick sale. He's been a really pretty good chairman, actually. I think he's made some very bad decisions with who he's hired. He's had a bit of bad luck as well, but he's really put himself in with the local community. I mean, he's been out in Sunderland drinking with the fans before and things like that, you know. Right. So he's done a lot of stuff like that.
So it would be a blow.
I don't think he deliberately wants them to. I don't think that he's just looking to get out for any other reason than he's given it a go and it didn't work out for him. He's a speculator and he'll go back to doing his thing.
So what should Leicester be doing now? Should they get rid of Ranieri?
Well, I think that it will reach a point where they'll have to roll the dice.
Yeah.
And probably, get rid of him and bring somebody in. But it's important that they know who they want to bring in, and it's going to be difficult to know who it is. Sometimes it just works like that. Sometimes a different voice comes in and it just works. But not all the time, and it's a risk. I think the concern might be that they will feel so loyal to Ranieri, understandably, that to kick him out in such a manner would be just beyond the pale.
Mm.
But I suspect that the indignity would be worse if he was to take him down.
Yeah.
I think that there might be a desire perhaps to spare him the humiliation of complete failure the following season. And I think that it might well be that if they carry on playing the way that they're playing, then they might have to roll the dice and get somebody else in. And, you know, the problem is who.
Yeah.
You know, you're the English champions, you're maybe third, fourth, bottom. You're looking for a club, your manager to suit the English champions?
You're still looking for the Champions League.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I was going to come on to that, but I'm glad you mentioned it. I mean, if they beat Sevilla, which is a stretch, because Sevilla are a really
good side. And they're a really, really good cup team as well in Europe.
Yeah, they're an ideal team to knock out Leicester if you're UEFA, which I think we discussed before.
Yes.
because they're not very glamorous and they're really, really good. But if they overcome that, then it makes things, in many respects, it makes things worse for the Leicester ownership, because they think, well, if they keep losing matches in the Premier League.
Mm.
And then, of course, then the questions become, and they were talking about it on Monday Night Football before I left. They were talking about, well, what if, I think it was Jamie Carragher said, well, what if they keep winning in the Champions League and they're losing in the Premier League?
Yeah.
What does that say about the dressing room? What does that say about the players?
Mm.
If they can't get it together for the bread and butter, but they can do it, you know, in the big time. Yeah.
I think we'll see that in the next couple of weeks, because when they've got these two games coming up against
Sevilla. Is that this week or is it next week, isn't it?
It's split, isn't it? So I'm not sure if
they... I think it might be next week.
I know
week
Arsenal are kicking off this week.
Yeah.
I think it's next week for them.
That's right, indeed. And we'll see. So if they're a team transformed, then you'd have to look at them and go... But in fairness, they were not nowhere near as bad at the first half of the Champions League.
Yeah.
They were nowhere near as bad. They really lost it completely.
Yeah.
Mm. It would be a real surprise if they were to suddenly turn up against Sevilla and they were back on it again.
Mm. Exactly. I mean, I think if you saw the cup replay against Derby last week, although they rolled out winning quite comfortably, was from the scoreline anyway, but that was not a comfortable game for them. And yes, they made a lot of changes in there. But I suppose that really shows the problems they've got with depth. Last year, they were lucky because... I say the word lucky again, but they didn't have any major injury worries.
Yeah, that's right.
They were a bit lucky last season.
They played only played 41 games.
Yeah, they had
as well
they,
the whole season.
Yeah, they had a shorter season than their rivals.
Yeah,
their rivals were not playing very well last season, and they had a smallish squad which they managed to get together and keep together. That does require a degree of luck to put all of that
exactly
together.
I mean, you can flip a coin 20 times. And it will turn up heads every time. It's a million to one chance that will actually happen. Actually, is a million to one. But it can happen.
Mm.
All you need is everything should just fall in the right place.
Yeah, this isn't a toss of the coin. I mean, those guys earned every single minute of that time.
Yeah, and over 38 games, you've got you've got how many tosses of the coin, haven't you, throughout each game? The luck does not carry you through everywhere.
It's luck in terms of Napoleon's, you know, idea of having lucky generals. You know, I mean, it's not so much, you know, you depend on it, but goodness me, it definitely all went rolling for them. You know, that season. And to their eternal credit, they capitalised on it fully and made it work for them. Because other clubs wouldn't have done.
No, exactly.
This season they're struggling with injuries, aren't they? Because they brought Mendy in to replace Kante and he got injured almost in his second or third game.
Yeah.
And he's only just coming back, so maybe that might help them. They brought in another player called Ndidi.
Yeah, he's only got 20 though, isn't he?
Yes, so Ndidi.
But he looks all right. So, you know, and then Vardy was out for a lot of it. But having said that, you know, it may not just be that they're suffering from the same luck or lack of luck as everybody else does, but there's something got to be wrong in the dressing room. I think you said earlier.
Well,
there's got to be. For a Joe to come out and say, I'm never going to play for Ranieri again, when he was, I mean, he was a regular in the side last season. He wasn't. You know, always starting, but he was certainly part of that winning group, wasn't he?
Mm.
So something has gone wrong there. So I don't know whether Ranieri should go or not. I think I'd like to see, you know, let their injury guys come back and give it a go. But, you know, time is running out.
Not making any predictions.
No.
But I think we've got a few months now to go. We can start sort of thinking about who might be going down. Who do you think, if not Leicester, then who?
Well, I think Sunderland will go down. Sorry, Terry, but I think Palace is probably are on that downward spiral. Borough, I think, have got a little bit left in the tank.
Yeah.
But Leicester are on such a run. I mean, five straight defeats.
Yeah. Well, Borough at least picking up draws.
They are.
Yeah. But yeah. It's keeping them down there. But yeah.
But it only takes a few bad results for them to... and I haven't looked at their fixture list, so you know
it is getting a bit compacted down there as well. Mm. I mean, but I think Watford did show that all you need is two wins, and you can just boot yourself up that table, can't you? Because it was getting quite precipitous for them, wasn't it? Mm. They were sinking down, and Bournemouth, they were 1-0 down when we were coming down, but they're sinking that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few twists and turns to come yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that it isn't entirely out of the question for Sunderland and Palace. They're going to need to improve pretty quickly. This time last season, I was like, Palace are going down. Yeah. I'm actually going to be a little bit more optimistic this time around. And I am going to think Palace can, in time, start keeping some clean sheets. And with the players that they have, I do think that they have just about enough to keep themselves up. Mm. And I think that they might need 95 minutes at the last game of the season in order to do it. But I think if they hold their nerve, they might just make it out. So I'm going to cross my fingers and go for that. I worry about Hull. I think Hull have had a great bounce under Marco Silva, but they still don't have very good players. And I think that over the next few weeks will tell.
Mm.
And even Swansea, although they're being very well coached at the moment, you know, they still have that squad is still pretty much rubbish. And I think that there's concerns there. So I think it's definitely up for grabs.
Mm.
I don't think anybody should realistically say you should be that pessimistic. But I think probably the team that I fear for the most, unfortunately, Jan, I'm afraid, is Sunderland. And again, along the lines of what you've been saying, I mean, they've been flirting with it for so long and they just haven't been able to, you know, bring in real quality. And they've been a bit unlucky as well with the big proviso is that whole thing with the Sam thing. And they totally torpedoed their pre-season. Sunderland should sue the FA for all of that.
This season would have been massively different if he hadn't have gone there. But there you go. But what we need to do now is sack the manager and get a new one in just before we play our Newcastle and the Fizzy Pop League, which is where we're going to be next season. It's all their bloody fault. If they were up...
And you won't be able to play them next season, though.
If Palace go down, we won't be able to play Brighton next season. And you won't be able to play Newcastle if Sunderland get down.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Hmm.
Oh, well.
Well, Jan, you better take your mind off it. So I think you better write this week's box set.
I'll do all of it this time as well.
Yeah. Well, you got the FA Cup this weekend, haven't you?
Yes. It always seems to fall for the FA Cup for me. So that's pretty good. So I look forward to putting that. Some great ties going on in the FA Cup.
Yeah. Well, now that Leicester have won their replay, it's a complete round of Premier League sides versus non-Premier League sides.
Mm.
So so we could end up with no Premier League teams in the round.
That would be brilliant.
All Premier League teams.
Yeah. Which would be
more likely.
Yeah, that's the base. It's all been, the FA Cup, this is awful the way that the Premier League teams are not paying it.
Yeah.
They're paying respect to it. And then it actually turns out the quarterfinals are all Premier League teams. So.
Yeah. All the teams in this round, I think, well, there are five out of the top six are there, and Leicester are there, the champions. So it's
So actually, it's pretty much right, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Sounds about right.
So yes, there's the magic of the cup for you, and as you know, it should be some cracking ties up there. Arsenal don't play till Monday when they're playing Sutton, so.
Nice. Is that a game on a Monday night?
It's on a Monday night. Yeah.
Holy moly!
We might have to organise a different night if we can.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. If we record on Tuesday,
we want to watch that game.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think I do watch. something could go horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, it is those perilous 3G pitches. I understand they bite professional footballers.
Oh God! Can you imagine what the narrative's going to be like around that?
Oh, it's not even a proper pitch. It already is.
Really?
Well, I don't think that Arsene does himself any favours with his attitude to 3G pitches. But if they come a cropper in that game, then it's all going to get pretty Piers Morgan pretty soon.
God.
God, can you imagine?
Oh, dear
God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listeners, we're not going to...
We'll talk about Arsenal after we've switched the mics off. You don't really want it. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant.
Do you know something? You know something?
Taps finger on nose.
Oh.
Yes, if you want to read Jan's preview of this weekend's... the pick of this weekend's TV fixtures, then go on to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball and subscribe, like so many others have.
So many others.
Yes. Yeah, and if you did, then you'd know that what you should be calling Leicester City now is Buster City.
Buster City, exactly, yeah. And you'd know what we meant if you subscribe to the newsletter.
But that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Fillon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
What are you looking at?
I was looking at your funky steampunk magnifier. And it's got crocodile clips and everything on it.
Yeah, it's...
Is it for soldering?
It's for soldering.
I thought the crocodile clips were for nipples.
No. Those crocodile clips down there are for nipples.
Oh, I say.
Oh, yeah,
they're more nipple size.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's got... Oh, yes, I can see the soldering iron. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, kinky.
Very kinky.
Can I open the door? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh. Where'd my mouse go? Where's my cursor? Oh, there it is.